We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, coming to you live on a Sunday afternoon after the Chargers lost to the Denver Broncos. Joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. The year is coming to an end, and I am happy that it's over in terms of, well, we got one more game. But in terms of Chargers football, it's coming to a close, and I'm happy to turn the page on the year. Look forward to, personally, a year that's going to be just like nothing's going to happen. No big thing is going to happen, I don't think, which seems nice. Steven, how are you?
You say that now, you know, things can always change. But yeah, man, at this time, normally I'm, you know, lethargic about the idea of football season coming to an end. This season, I'm ready for the off season on both sides from above my fandom. It was a rough year for Utah football, rough year for the Chargers. I'm more excited to talk about the offseason and everything that's going to come with that over the next few weeks than actually talking about games. So we'll have some thoughts about today's game overall. But like Tyler said, obviously the year is coming to an end. Hopefully everybody out there stays safe tonight and has a great time celebrating the new year. 2023 was a bit up and down, but overall, you know, as a podcast, we hit obviously a huge milestone getting picked up by the actual Chargers team, which has been, despite the record, has been an awesome experience working with Tyler as well as the rest of the Chargers team. So we know it's been a bit of an adjustment for, you know, you guys to support the shows in a different way. And we appreciate all that great support. We wouldn't be able to have gotten that deal with the Chargers without you guys supporting the show. So we're very grateful and appreciative of all the great and positive interactions we have on a weekly basis with you guys. You know, certainly despite all of the losing and the injuries and things like that, we still have a great time, be it in here in the chat or, you know, in the YouTube comments or in the Discord. So really appreciative of you guys and can't thank Tyler, Alex Insdorf, Alex Katzen, and Arjun enough for all their hard work for this year in 2023 to take the podcast to new heights, as we have kind of done every single year. We've just been on a steady incline, which has been awesome. Certainly exceeded any expectations Tyler and I had when we first started this thing 4 years ago, and it's been an awesome ride, and excited to see what 2024 has in store for the podcast.
Yeah, thank you everyone listening, watching, etc. for this, and thank you just for the seasons in general. We haven't exactly covered the most exciting seasons
Like, one day we'll get an exciting
one day season. We will miss the 2018 season, which was the really last good season. Yeah. Then otherwise it's been, you know, what it's been the last few years. But I appreciate you guys always being in here and just being funny or cracking a joke. And sometimes I can't respond to those jokes because they're super mean and offensive, but sometimes I laugh because yeah. You guys are still pretty funny about it. So yeah, it's been nice and it's been great doing everything that we've done this year. Whether we've got one more episode or 100 more episodes with the Chargers or 1,000 more episodes, who knows? But it was awesome regardless.
Yeah, 100%. So very appreciative of you guys. Hopefully you have had a great 2023. Hopefully you have a great 2024 as well and continue some momentum in your own life in whatever regard you are looking to make some progress in. So should be a lot of fun talking about the off season. We'll get to that in a couple weeks here, but the Chargers obviously coming up short at the hands of the Denver Broncos. There was surprisingly a lot of like negativity about the way the team played today. Not in the sense of like, I'm not trying to defend the way that they played or say that they played well, but I kind of thought that after losing your best three receivers, your top two centers, your starting left guard, your starting quarterback, obviously, that expectations would be kind of lower for the offense and still. Everybody was very upset about the way that Easton Stick and the offense played today, Tyler. So let's start there. What did you make of the way that the offense performed against the Denver Broncos this afternoon?
Objectively, it was not that great. I mean, I think the run game was better than last time, I think, maybe, with Austin Ekeler, and then he ended up fumbling it. But otherwise, it wasn't a good offensive output.
No.
Again, what did I expect? I don't know. I didn't expect 14 points. So I guess they underperformed or they performed about as expected. It wasn't a good performance, but I didn't expect much either. So like, I'm not angry or upset that it was a poor performance. I think just what I really wanted to see more than anything else was not Alex Erickson having more receiving yards in one game than any game that Quentin Johnston has had this season. I get that Quentin Johnston in this game was shadowed by Patrick Surtain and Erickson was not, but that's just kind of the year. And I think there were this game, even with the guys that were missing, the guys that were in presented so many of the issues that we've seen throughout this year. It's Ekeler fumbling. It's missed tackles in the secondary. It's a good defensive pass interference penalty. It's Quentin Johnston not having a great game and being kind of a disappointment. Like, so maybe that's what everybody's a bit, you know, up in arms about, because
sure,
I didn't expect much. We still got some of the same things that have stung us throughout this season, but no, I didn't expect this team to go out and put up 20 in Denver and come out with a win.
Yeah, I think the expectations, you know, with this kind of receiver group and people are you pointed out, obviously, rightfully a little annoyed at the Quentin Johnston usage, you know, kind of peppering him with targets at the very end is like, you could have been doing that the whole game. You know, just some frustration in that regard. You know, Keelan Doss getting 7 targets of like 4 yards or less was a tad frustrating too. But I did not expect this offense to come in and play super well. I was maybe a little disappointed that the overall enthusiasm did not, you know, translate from last week to this week, but I'm not surprised that the offense, you know, didn't perform super well. I thought Stick took a bit of a step back from last week. I thought last week he objectively played pretty well. This week it was kind of a mess from an accuracy standpoint. I guess the positive for me would be the way that the offensive line protected and the protection plan was significantly better than the first time the Chargers played the Broncos. And so that I guess could be a positive. I thought Jordan McFadden in his first start looked like he was a capable player, which is what you want to see from a young player in that moment. Had a couple Rashawn Slater holding penalties, which I don't know if I'll really agree with those, but it is what it is. I thought the offensive line played better today. I thought, you know, you see some good things from Alex Erickson. I'm not going to like hold the offense like to a level that I expect them to, you know, come in here and, you know, light up the Denver Broncos. That's just not the reality of the situation, given their receivers, quarterback, offensive line injuries, the running back regression. Still a little disappointed at just some like minor execution things. And ideally for a guy like Easton Stick, you want to see him put together some more positive games to end the season. And it seems like he took a bit of a step back today.
Yeah. Looking at the offseason, looking at this game, I'm just starting to feel more and more concerned about this offense, really the whole team in general, and where the direction of the team can go, because no single pick the Chargers make in the first round, and really their first three picks in the first three rounds, are not going to turn this team around, even if they're great players. It's going to take a lot of players to turn this team around. Not that they all need to be all pros, but you know, what is the future of this offense? Who's the coordinator? Technically, we're not 100% sure. What's the staff? Who's the head coach? Who's calling plays? Who's the backup? Who's potentially the other backup? Who's the center? Who's the backup center? Who's RB1? Who's RB2? Who's RB3? Is there a fullback? Who's tight end one? Tight end two is currently a healthy scratch. Tight end three was, at the beginning of the year, was cut. Four is out. I mean, or is Stone Smart. Like, it's really bleak right now. And I started to do just a breakdown of the roster and how many spots the Chargers are going to need to fill. And it's not great. And your wide receivers one, two, and three, in theory, those spots are filled. Yeah, assuming Mike Williams is cut, but Keenan Allen's hurt, Josh Palmer's hurt and has been hurt, and Quentin Johnston has been what he's currently been. It's rough. So I'm entering next season a bit in the doldrums, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, the broadcast was a mess for several reasons. This is obviously being CBS's, you know, worst crew. But Kyle, it was Khalil Mack, every single time. K-A-H
apostrophe Leal. Yeah.
Yeah, so bad. They called Jared Everett several times. They were convinced that the Broncos' playoff chances were like still very much alive if they won today. Like, they talked about the Broncos' playoff chances like 37 times. I'm like, okay, talk about something else. But anyways, you know, at the end of the game, they're saying like, oh, like whoever the GM and the coach are, they're going to come in and inherit this like top tier roster, whatever the exact comment was. And it's like, what are you watching right now that makes you think that this is a top tier roster? And I think, you know, that's one of the bigger issues that I have with like these constant comments of like, oh, you should hire so-and-so from the defensive side of the ball because they'll come in and fix this defense. The defense is going to be blown to hell in the offseason. Like, this defense is not going to look the same at all. So it's setting up for, you know, an offseason that people, I think, should really temper expectations, which for the Chargers is going to be a very new thing. But the offseason is about finding, you know, more building block players, because right now I think you do not have enough of those to go around. I think you obviously have, you know, Herbert and Slater, who I still believe very much in. We'll see what the numbers are like today. I didn't feel like he got beat at all today outside of the two penalties. But you still have a franchise quarterback, a franchise left tackle, you know, maybe one of these offensive linemen that are on the younger side can really cement themselves next year. Yeah, I don't know if I have full confidence that both of them are, but you know, one of them potentially maybe. Keenan, I still would count as a building block player. You know, I think the health is obviously a big thing there, his age obviously, but you know, he's going to walk into being wide receiver one. And if he stays healthy with Justin Herbert this year, we're talking about a guy who's well over 1,400 yards receiving. So there's just not a lot. I think you have some solid players, but you don't have a ton of building block players. And that's what the offseason is going to be about. Like, we're going to do a ton of draft content in the offseason, as we always do. This is a team that should be doing their absolute best to be trading back and making at least 10 draft picks next year, you know, because they just don't have the guys right now. And it's a frustrating time right now, given the state of the roster, given the state of the coaching staff and how little player development has happened. I mean, JT Woods today, perhaps like one of the bigger examples, is a healthy scratch after being activated from the NFI list. And Michael Peterson from Bolts from the Blue has tweeted out that he's played like 80 snaps across the last 2 years for the Chargers. It's just stuff like that is all up and down the Chargers roster. So it's going to be a long season potentially, but at the same time, you look at a team like the Arizona Cardinals, you look at what the Houston Texans have done. You know, there's different stages of, you know, a competitive rebuild that what the Minnesota Vikings have done. You get the right coaching here and things can turn around very quickly. So, you know, that's kind of the silver lining right now is, you know, coaching can make such a big difference in the NFL. And if the Chargers can make the right hire here in the next couple of weeks, than some of these guys who are maybe, you know, potentially building block players. Maybe they do become, maybe they get become solid players. So, you know, that's the thing right now, is just kind of hoping that this team gets the coaching hire right and some of these players can turn their careers around.
Yeah, and just alignment from whoever's making decisions on the draft picks to whoever the head coach is, maybe potentially the same person, we can get into that. But it just feels, and really for the 11 years now, that there's no real, okay, I'm going to take this player and it's going to work for you in this specific way because this is what you'd like to do, this is what you'd like to use them for, and it's going to work out. They hit the ground running. You talk about these teams that make turnarounds, like the Texans, from day one, it's like, okay, Stroud does this, Dell does this, we got Collins doing this. You know, Collins took some bit to develop, but like they instantly hit the ground running. With the Chargers, it's always been with Mike Williams, with Melvin Gordon, now with Quentin Johnston. You know, these guys have like 1,000 combined yards in their rookie seasons for first round picks. You know, Joe Reed could never figure it out. Isaiah Spiller could not get on the field. Keenan Allen was probably going to be good no matter what, but he made on the field because of injury initially. You know, it just feels like the Chargers have not been able to align their pick from the GM with what the coordinator wants to do immediately. Yeah. And I don't know if they just feel that first round picks are long game picks. So you get a whole year to adjust to the NFL, but like, that's not how it should work. No. Not that they need to be perfect immediately, but you should hope for a first round pick to have like CeeDee Lamb's potential or a trajectory where it's first round pick and he's good. Then he's pretty good. Then he's really good. And then he's just great. Like, and that nice ascension, but he started, you know, with a very, very solid floor as a good player. Whereas the Chargers are just such a hard time getting these first rounders in particular to get going early. And then inevitably we're all disappointed by all three of them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, when people were healthy, I don't think that Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers would have been having drastically different rookie seasons. But you know that you would be able to count on those guys right now. And right now you just cannot count on Quentin Johnson to make consistent football plays. Maybe he gets there. Maybe he just needs a full offseason in the NFL and training and reps with Herbert and a better offense. I don't know. Like, sure, it's still possible. And you know, I'm not going to bury the player, but at the same time, this is a draft that has two very high end wide receiver prospects. And if the Chargers are sitting there at pick number 6 and Malik Nabers is there, I'm not drafting Malik Nabers because of Quentin Johnston. Like, that's, you know, Quentin's potential development is not prohibiting me from drafting Malik Nabers. Like, that's just kind of where things are at. And if that's the case, you know, maybe, you know, that's kind of the result here. Maybe this is a Jalen Reagor situation, as unfortunate as that would be. But the thing with Quentin to me that's been most frustrating has always been the usage, because like, you'll see glimpses of it here and there. I mean, they threw him 5 targets on the last 2 drives, and it's like, why are you not doing that the whole game? You know, so it's a mix of both, I think, of the player development, of the coaching, and of the usage of the quarterback play. So it's been frustrating. But then you look at all the players that were drafted behind him. I mean, Dalton Kincaid broke the Bills record for most receptions by a rookie. Sam Laporta is I think like over 800 yards as a rookie. Like, those are all guys that are flourishing in their respective roles. So it definitely adds to the frustration. Quentin is going to have to bust his ass in the offseason, because he's going to have to make up a lot of area here. And like we're talking about, if he's wide receiver 4 in camp again, then, you know, we're potentially looking at him not really making a strong impact until 2025 at the earliest, depending on Keenan's health.
Yeah, like you said, Quentin Johnston should not prevent you from drafting another receiver in the first round if that receiver is worth the selection, obviously. I do feel Nabers is worth that selection at 6. Odunze, not as much. I'm not as high on him as maybe some others who feel like he's very close to those other two. But the Chargers all just don't really need that kind of play. I think they need more of a Nabers type than Odunze. Yeah. Odunze is a good player, but just not quite the fit for the Chargers right now. Yeah, Josh Palmer, I know he's the 3rd round pick, but showed a lot more in his first 2 years, but really his first year of actually playing, which was last year, than Quentin Johnston did this year. And that didn't stop them from taking a wide receiver with Mike Williams potentially in their plans. I wouldn't not take a player there. The difference obviously being that you could take Brock Bowers, and while it's not a premium position, it's a tight end, not a wide receiver, It's a very easy fit. There's no question marks. He's tight end one. You're done. You set it. You go. Great. You've got a tight end one. No questions about it. There's no one suggesting that Parham would compete for tight end one there. All respect to him. Draft a receiver. More questions, which we sort of just did. But Neighbors is by far the better prospect. And frankly, his teammate, Brian Thomas Jr., is a better prospect than Quentin Johnston.
Yeah, I haven't watched a ton of Brian Thomas, but I don't want this to be framed as like we're blaming Quentin Johnston for the issue.
No, not at all.
What's happening at all here, because you know the people who mostly share the blame for what the Chargers have experienced this season have already been fired, and you know the other one is potentially the offensive coordinator, so offensive line coach as well. So this season for me is firmly coaching and roster management. That's why the Chargers are where they are at right now. The lack of player development over the last 3 years has just been astonishingly bad. And I thought it was bad under Anthony Lynn, and it's been significantly worse for Brandon Staley's coaching staff. So it's a big thing. And my whole point here is that whoever comes in as the head coach, whoever comes in as the GM, you have maybe 5-6 players on this team who are like solidified in their roles. Every other spot is up for competition. If your name is not Keenan Allen, Justin Herbert, Rashawn Slater, maybe Gerald Everett, if he's back, Khalil, if he's back, Derwin, if you're not one of those guys, your spot is on the line. Like that's my mentality for the offseason is that none of these players should have their spots guaranteed next year. And this is a new coaching staff that needs to come in and change the culture of handing people jobs because of where they were drafted. And that's just not something that can continue going forward.
No, and I think that I don't know that this is something that Ben Johnson, like first-time head coaches, would be against or hesitant to do, you know, is make those difficult decisions. Like, I don't care how much money or what draft pick or whatever. You know, I don't know how many of these coaches who do that these days did that from day one, but that's just another reason to go with someone like Harbaugh, who would just go, look, I don't really care. We're just going to win. We're going to get as close to winning as possible. And if you're not part of that, sorry. You know, Tomlin's the same way. And what are they at? 9 wins now?
Yep.
It's just that way.
I mean, Mike Tomlin's team drafted a quarterback in the first round last year and actively chose not to play him today because they felt like Mason Rudolph gave them a better chance to win.
That's like, a quarterback.
That's what you have to do, man. This is the NFL. Like, this is a results-based business. And, you know, you don't have the luxury of being patient all the time. So it's, you know, it is what it is. So shifting gears here a little bit, we do have to obviously give a shout out to two players today who added to their resumes. And that first player being Mr. Khalil Mack, who surpassed 100 sacks on his career. He is the first player to do that, not the first player to do that. That's a mistake. That's not what I was trying to say. Anyways, 16 sacks in the season is his best season in quite some time since 2017. Was busting his ass out there, regardless of the situation here. You know, run defense, pass rush. He was the best player on the field, in my opinion, today. So have to give a shout out to Khalil. You pointed out something great on Twitter. I'll let you kind of get to that point, but it's been a true joy watching Khalil Mack. It sucks that it's not a more meaningful season, but he's been a joy to watch every single week on film, live on the broadcast. He's just an outstanding player, outstanding pro, and you know has you know moved up the rankings in terms of favorite Chargers ever just because he's been so impactful on a week-to-week basis. Tyler, you're muted.
Sorry. Anyway, Khalil Mack. Yes, first of all, congratulations. No, not the first person to hit 100 sacks. Wouldn't be the first person to hit 200 sacks, although there's only one other. It's interesting that a former Raiders player who's only been with the Chargers for technically less than two seasons now would become one of your favorite Chargers players ever. But
yeah,
there's just an old school greatness about him on and off the field that you just don't see all the time. And the Chargers don't really have that often. Not the greatness is frequent on most teams, but there's just some throwback guys, some great players who you just have to admire them when they're here. And I admire and respect everything that Khalil Mack has done this season because it's basically been bad since the jump. I mean, they started 0-2. Joey got hurt, and he was basically, it was him and this rookie Thule, you know, and Chris Rumpf was hurt, and it was just Khalil Mack on defense. It was the front seven, really, the whole year. Like, the front seven had to be the only thing that was working for the Chargers, and really towards the end of the season, just the rushers and the defensive linemen.
Yeah.
So for him to continue to just try and fight and get out there and bust his butt and be really good altogether, I mean, hats off to him. Major respect to him. You cannot let him go next season. You can't cut him. If that's his last season next year, okay, maybe I can understand that, but he cannot leave. You can't let him out the door. You can't let him out of the building. If he wants out, I don't blame him, but don't let him out. Like, you got to keep this guy. He's awesome, and I respect the heck out of him for what he's been able to do, and I really appreciate his work as a Charger.
Yeah, so the stat that I was trying to say earlier, Khalil Mack, this according to Chris Rim, is the 19th player to reach 100 sacks in his first 10 seasons since sacks became official in 1982. So one of the best players ever at his position. Hopefully he's able to continue building up his Hall of Fame resume with the Chargers. You know, like Tyler said, I'm of the mindset that you keep Khalil, give him an extension if you need to, because I think he has the potential to, you know, be that culture setter, be that tone setter for the next regime. And that's such a valuable piece, because he is somebody who everybody is going to rally around. And we've seen that over the last 2 years from just, you know, the team dinner standpoint and his, you know, impact on even like Quentin Johnson, who's on the offensive side of the ball as a rookie. You know, his leadership and his ability to set the culture is so impactful. And he's performing like a top 10 edge rusher this year. I don't know if he's going to be a Pro Bowl player. I don't know if he's going to be an All Pro player because of the team. But he's in the top 10 in every single category among edge rushers, and pressure rate, in pass rush productivity, and total pressure, sacks, run stops, run stop percentages, run stop grade, pass rush grade, all of it. He's top 10. And it's just been a true treat to watch this year. It's been somebody that I love turning on the tape and watching every single week. His teammates love him. His coaching staff loves him. So I don't know what the future holds. Riley pointed out he could certainly ask for a trade, and I would not begrudge him from doing that, because he's at the stage where he just wants to win. But if I'm the incoming GM, I'm doing everything I can to keep Khalil Mack around.
Yeah, I think he'll stay around. I think he'll stay around. Unrelated but related, and not really this particular point, but Paul mentions trade Bosa, James, and Williams. I don't know if that's going to happen, but what did you make of Derwin James in particular today? That he's been the discussion point for a lot of fans around, well, let's trade him. The numbers haven't been great. The film hasn't been great. What you see on the broadcast hasn't been great. Do you feel that's at all possible? Have you looked into his contract in particular? Is there even an option for trading him?
So from an on-field standpoint, I thought he played great today. I feel like we felt his presence today at a high level. You know, he was very physical today, almost had an interception. I felt like it was the usual Derwin James that we're accustomed to seeing today. I think last week he played better. I think the thing about Derwin James is that, as we've said a couple of times, Brandon Staley had this insane vision for Derwin James, and playing him in six different positions, and, you know, using him as an edge rusher at times, and using him as a linebacker at times, free safety, strong safety, slot corner, like all this stuff. And I think eventually that just took its toll on him, and I think there was a real like lack of confidence because of that, specifically this year. The penalties and the way that he was kind of targeted earlier in the season by the referees, I think, played an impact. I'm of the belief that you can still get high-end play out of Derwin James going forward with a better plan for Derwin James. That being said, he is one of probably their more valuable trade assets. I think if you're the GM coming in with like, hey, like you can take on as much dead money as you want, like this is completely like your vision, and that GM could come in and try and trade Derwin James, like I think that is a potential possibility. But I'm kind of the belief that Derwin still has a couple seasons of high end play left in him. I know that's not super common, but to me, I think just the overload that Brandon Staley's scheme put on him was overall a negative. And I think in a different scheme, one that is allowing him to be around the box more often, I think he can kind of rebound going forward. So that's my thought process. Trading him this offseason is difficult. Next offseason in 2025, it would be a bit easier to trade and get off of his contract.
What'd you make of the broadcast comment that Derwin James says in the next head coach, he's looking for someone who moves the needle in the locker room and in the fan base? Because
same.
yeah, well, me too. The locker room comment, I think, was interesting because, I mean, Staley and Joe, when they first met, it was like best friends and they'll unlock this and all that. And I think it really felt like the honeymoon stage of a relationship. And then a few years in, you know, for that to now be the comment for Durbin to say, yeah, we need someone in the locker room who can move the needle for us. I don't know. I think it's a bit different.
Yeah. I think from Derwin's perspective, right? Like this guy comes in and says, we're looking at Derwin as our defensive Justin Herbert. And, you know, I forget the exact verbiage, but in the offseason in 2020, this past off or two off seasons ago, Brandon Staley came out publicly and said, like, our goal on defense was to arm Derwin James with more pieces around him and be able to feature him in this, you know, crazy role that will just showcase his talents. And if you're Derwin, you're like, hell yeah, sign me up. Like, of course, I'm going to love like hearing that I'm going to be the centerpiece of the defense. Of course, I'm going to love that you think so highly of me that I'm going to call plays, like all this stuff. Like Brandon Staley definitely sold Derwin on, you know, this vision of taking his career to new heights and doing all these things in a positive way for him. So I can understand why Derwin was, you know, very loyal publicly to Brandon Staley because of everything that was promised to him. But it's kind of one of those things that as you get through a relationship more often, you kind of focus in more on what they do with everybody else and how they treat everybody else. And, you know, as Chris Rim pointed out, there was definitely an aspect of favoritism, and, you know, and that's unfortunately one of the biggest reasons why Brandon Staley is unemployed right now. So I think that is something that Derwin and all these guys have realized, is that everybody needs to be bought in, not just like the star players, which was seems like that was the case under Brandon Staley.
Yeah, definitely. Time to talk about Harbaugh.
Yes, we are going to talk about Jim Harbaugh. I do want to give a shout out to Cameron Dicker. We gave a lot of praise to him on the Chargers channel. He hit 2 50-yard field goals today. Should have had a third one, but it was blocked by Mr. Zach Allen. So Cameron Dicker, I think the last drive is kind of the embodiment of who Cameron Dicker has become for the Chargers, where Giff Smith is actively going to take a 52-yard field goal attempt instead of trying to go score a touchdown with a minute and 12 seconds left. Just a ton of trust in Cameron Dicker and where he's at in his career. Like I mentioned, there's not many building block players, and it feels strange to call a kicker a building block. But Cameron Dicker is one of the best kickers in the league. We see these guys on a week-to-week basis missing kicks. We saw Mason Crosby leave a 53-yard field goal like 10 yards short today. Granted, he's very old and once was the same kind of kicker, but it's just a treat to watch. Like, he walked out there for the 50-yard field goal. No thought in my mind that he was going to miss it. Same with the 52-yard field goal that was blocked. Same with the other 52-yard field goal. Like, it's just complete trust and confidence in Cameron Dicker right now. So I know we talked about him on our show on the Chargers channel. He went out today and added to his, you know, personal record of most 50-yard field goals in a Charger season. So I have to give a shout out to him today.
Yeah, I mentioned on Twitter, Khalil Mack is number one, but if you had to make a list of top 10 Chargers of 2023, I think Cameron Dicker is number two. And it would be Keenan Allen, or it would be Justin Herbert, I think, had they played the entire season, but they haven't. And so therefore, to me, you can put those guys at 3 and 4 if you'd like. I think Cameron Dicker belongs at number two. You guys let me know in the chat if you agree or disagree. But, could argue he's number one because no one has specifically done their job as well as Cameron Dicker has done this entire season. But I can't discredit what Mack is doing out there, at all respect to Cameron Dicker, a much more important and pivotal position. certainly more snaps too, I would say. But still, I think Cameron Dicker, I think as Lynn points out, Tootley should round out that top five. Yeah, so I'd say Mack, Dicker, something, Keenan and Herbert, probably Keenan third, I think, considering he was playing at a level compared to his peers that was higher than Herbert. Then Tootley at five. I think that'd be fair. I tried making a top 10 earlier yesterday, and I stopped at like 8 because I could not, in good conscience, like find a way to actually put these guys in the top 10. It didn't feel right. It was weird.
Yeah, no, last year there was like a much more difficult conversation to be had about guys in like the 7 to 12 range this year. It's just kind of like, I don't know. Like, I think having Cameron Dicker at 2 is for me probably a bit of a stretch, given that Keenan was on pace for like 1500 yards, but I totally get it. Certainly top 5. One of the best kickers in the league, like I mentioned. It's just such a calming presence to have out there. And, you know, you look at what's happening in Cleveland with Dustin Hopkins and thinking like where things could have been had they traded Cameron Dicker and like kept Dustin Hopkins. Like, Dustin Hopkins has been great for the Browns, but just to have Dicker around for the long haul is going to be, it's going to be really fun to see his development. Team loves him and he's a great personality. Mm-hmm. I'm not on TikTok, but my sister-in-law is on TikTok and she says that every single TikTok features Cameron Dicker. So I think he's pretty popular in the locker room as well.
Yeah, our YouTube clip out for the Chargers was Cameron Dicker. Chargers Weekly clip out was Cameron Dicker. Obviously, he's had the infomercial stuff and all that. So yeah. I get it. Yeah, he's there's not a lot of positive going on this season, but thankfully, he's very good and very personable.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right, a couple super chats here to get to. Jesse Aguilar said McFadden played very, very well. So did Henley in his minor role. Was really hoping he got there more. The Dayon Henley thing was frustrating for me. He comes in for one drive for Nick Neiman, and he has 4 tackles. 2 of them were like truly like impact plays, and then that's it. That was all he played for the rest of the game. So that part was frustrating. I do agree. I thought Jordan McFadden played well. Curious to see the film there. I do feel like Brendan Hymus was a bit more keen on helping McFadden out than helping Jamari out in this one. But based off the broadcast, I feel like McFadden was solid in his first start. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I wasn't watching McFadden, you know, get beaten for a sack or watching him and Trip him and Trey Pipkins like mess up an assignment and give up a hit or something. So yeah. It seemed good. You know, Broncos weren't exactly at full strength on defense, but overall the operation looked a lot cleaner than it did in terms of pass protection than it did against the Broncos, where every 3 plays was a nasty hit.
Yeah, for sure. Miss Andrea Shun, she sent a super chat and said, Happy New Year. Appreciate the Shun family.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to all of you guys. Hope you have a great time tonight. Next one, Make the Transition, said he proposed to his girlfriend and she said yes, now his fiance. And he says that was definitely an omen we get in Jim Harbaugh. First of all, congratulations, Mr. Make the Transition, always in here as much as he can be. Hopefully you and your fiance have a wonderful, long-lasting marriage.
That's awesome, man. I've been married for a whopping 5.5 months now, and it's been great. Going strong. So yeah, have at it. The wedding is awesome. It's a lot to plan. You're sort of happy you're done planning it once it's over, but make sure you take the time to, you know, spend time with your wife, enjoy the day, because it's the best day of your life, and it goes like that.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. All right, before we get to our Jim Harbaugh content that we wanted to discuss, I have to tell you guys about Prize Picks. As you guys know, we've been working with Prize Picks throughout the whole season. It's been a lot of fun. It's a great, easy to use daily fantasy football app. All you have to do is pick the players and choose more or less. They have great promos every single week, whether that's a combination of NBA and NFL, college football and NFL, whatever floats your boat. They have Taco Tuesday, things like that. It's a great site to use, easy way to make some extra money, have some skin in the game. It is not technically gambling, so it is usable in California as well, which I know is a big thing for most of our listeners. You can get a deposit match up to $100 if you use the link prizepicks.com/guilty. Use the code GUILTY for that deposit match. Like I said, super easy to use, a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys have been using it and taking advantage. Because it's a great way to get that extra skin in the game.
It's fun. It makes it more fun. Whether you succeed or you do not succeed, it makes it a lot more fun to have that going while the games are playing.
Yeah.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
100%. All right, so we're going to talk about Jim Harbaugh here for a little bit. Apparently, we do not spend enough time talking about our number one coaching candidate, so we're going to talk about our number one coaching candidate for a bit here. After that, we'll take some questions, but a big piece of news regarding Jim Harbaugh's future came out that he has hired, once again, his former agent, who's also the agent of Tom Brady, Sean Payton, and some others. Is it Donnie, right?
I think Donnie, technically, or I could be wrong. You know what? We were so prepared for this, clearly. You're waiting for me to look it up now. Is that what the silence is? Okay, great. I Google it and it says Donnie Yen, so it's not that. I know it's not Donnie Yen, first of all. Chill. Donnie.
I was right. Okay.
You're right, and I should just shut up.
All right. So, yeah, he has brought back his former agent, Donnie. A lot of people saying this is a big step in Jim Harbaugh potentially making the jump back to the NFL. Lots of Michigan people pointing out that Donnie has been working with Jim Harbaugh for weeks now and working on the Michigan extension. So, Tyler, there was a lot of smoke this week about Jim Harbaugh's future. You know, a lot of college people think that Jim Harbaugh is leaving. A lot of NFL people think that he's staying. Where are you kind of at with Jim Harbaugh and his future at this point in time?
Yeah, some things were smoke and some were dusty farts. I feel like some things were actually like, oh, okay, that could be something. And some other things were like, nah, yeah, that can stay over there. I wasn't thrilled with some of the stuff that was coming out. I still think if it's 51-49, I think he's still leaning towards going and staying with Michigan. I don't think that this particular, you know, hire of the agent indicates, here we go to the NFL. You know, if Yi was already working with him on the Michigan extension and trying to make sure that was worked out, then like not worked out, but like if there was a going to be one, here's what it looks like. Then that doesn't indicate that he's jumping to the NFL. And technically it could still be the Raiders, or I don't think it's the Panthers now. That's for sure. I don't think it ever was, but I think when your owner's throwing beers at fans, I don't know if that's the one you want to go to.
Gosh.
That's just me, but that's a whole other thing. He's my number one head coaching candidate. I say it all the father fucking time, and it seems to go over some heads. But I still think he's returning to Michigan. I see the rumors. You hear the rumors, everybody's articles, and everybody knows somebody, this person at a funeral, this janitor, that person on the Supreme Scream at Knott's Berry Farm, you know, this person shopping for poinsettias at a pavilions, you know, everyone's got something. I just think that like he's staying at Michigan, and I'll believe it when I see it, because, you know, we did this with Tom Brady coming to the Chargers, and we did this with Sean Payton to the Chargers, and we did this when the Chargers were going to trade Rivers for Marcus Mariota, or the pick to get Marcus Mariota. Like, there's always this thing in the offseason, and then it never materializes. So this could certainly be the first thing, but as a fan who's been here for a few years now, I'll wait. And if it happens, great. If not, we got other options. In fact, we talked about those options. So I looked at other videos.
Yeah, we did talk about those other options. And apparently that makes us terrible fans. We're talking about non-Jim Harbaugh options. It is what it is. But I think for me, like over this past weekend, there was all this stuff coming out about like, you know, Harbaugh was super frustrated with the NCAA and like all of these things that were potentially coming down. And I was like, okay, like I can see how people might think that he would leave to try and avoid the NCAA punishments. And then Pete Thamel went on College Game Day and said that for the first infraction that was a recruiting infraction during COVID, the punishment is probably only going to be like half a game or maybe a one full game tops. And then this sign stealing stuff is also maybe like a game and a half or maybe two games tops. Like you're talking about a three game suspension and people are talking about it as like it's going to be a full season and like tons of infractions and like scholarships taken away and like all this stuff. And that just doesn't feel like that's the case. Like it feels like the NCAA is going to take action against him, but it's not going to be like this record setting, you know, suspension and we're going to suspend him for the whole season or like kick him out of the NCAA entirely as the way that it's being framed. So I feel like there's enough credible people that have come on the record have said that they think Harbaugh is leaving for me to maybe increase how much I feel like there is a chance of the Chargers landing him. But at the same time, this is Jim Harbaugh we're talking about. We have to understand like who we're talking about. He almost took the Minnesota Vikings job in 2021. He almost took the Broncos job last year. He's almost left Michigan like seven times. He almost left the 49ers before he got fired. Like this is a guy who is constantly going to try and evaluate his options. And if he feels like the Chargers is his best option, he'll take it. If he feels like it's the Raiders, he'll take it. If he feels like it's the Raiders, or if it feels like it's staying in Michigan, he'll stay there. But he's going to talk to everybody to try and drum up his value, because this is what Jim Harbaugh has done for his entire career as a football coach. So I think there is a greater chance of the Chargers landing him than how I felt like a month ago. But I'm still like, until he signs with the Chargers, I'm not going to predict that it's going to happen, because Harbaugh does this every single year where he flirts and flirts and flirts and then just stays in Michigan.
I truly believe that the Chargers are interested in Jim Harbaugh. If they're not, I'm switching fan bases, because like, how I don't know how you're not interested in Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I would believe that Jim Harbaugh is interested in the Chargers and the Bears and maybe some other options. I'm sure he's interested in Michigan. You know, I believe the reports that the Chargers probably reached out, that the Chargers are interested, 100%. That Jim Harbaugh had his agent, you know, an agent's deal isn't to just go, okay, we're only going to do Michigan and that's it. And it's right. Let's get as much money as possible, yes, out of this for you and for me. So I'm sure that the agent reached out to both parties, and I'm sure Jim Harbaugh said, yeah, go ahead and reach out to all these different teams and Michigan and whatever. So I believe all those reports. I totally believe it, because the goal here is to make money and as much money as possible and find the right place. So yeah, Go do those things. You know, you typically don't apply to one job. You go to different jobs and you try to leverage some things. That's just life. This one just happens to be for hundreds of millions of dollars, which I don't get to do, but hey, you know, yeah, I will wait to see it. If it happens, awesome. If not, we've got other people to pivot to. I know we talk about Ben Johnson a lot. Your other option is Dan Quinn or Bobby Slowick or Bieniemy or what. Like, we're going to talk about Ben Johnson. Sorry he didn't win against the Cowboys because they missed the call. I don't know. Rant for another time. But I see everyone on social media with the whole Ben Johnson stuff. I don't know which offensive option you want me to talk about after Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah. No, Ben Johnson is the only offensive option. That's why we talk about him so much. Mike McDonald doing some great things in Baltimore, but if you don't like Ben Johnson, you're not going to like Mike McDonald, because he's a first-year head coaching candidate who coaches defense. So, you know, it is what it is. The pool this year is very, very limited. The good news is that the Chargers have a franchise quarterback. They have an owner who seems to be willing to spend right now. So they should be able to get whoever they want. Because the Panthers job is terrible, because you have to work for David Tepper. The Commanders, maybe we'll see. Maybe that's a job that is maybe more appealing than others. And the Bears are keeping their head coach. So it's really basically the Chargers or the Commanders that are the top jobs. So, you know, the Chargers should be able to get their guy, whoever that guy is. They're going to cast a wide net. And so we feel like the best way to cover that wide net is to talk about that wide net, because they're not just going to zero in on Jim Harbaugh and have nothing else, because that's what the Broncos did. And then they zeroed in on Sean Payton, and then they zeroed in on DeMeco Ryans, and then they didn't have anybody else. So they got stuck. Not to say that Sean Payton's doing a bad job by any means or whatever, but the Broncos did not cast a wide net. They had three options, and they got stuck with those, the last of that option. So the Chargers are going to cast a wide net here on both sides, and I think we should talk about it that way.
Yes. If we have an agenda for anything, it's not Ben Johnson. Probably Bobby Slowick. I think that would be technically more of like a Steven-led agenda for something than anything else, and it's not an agenda. But yeah, I feel like that's someone we talk about more than others. But yeah, I don't know how your second option can be the one you have an agenda for. But hey, fan is short for fanatic.
Yeah, 100%. I understand why people want Jim Harbaugh. I completely get it. I am fully on board with that. But other than that, I'm not choosing other coaches with experience over Ben Johnson. Like, it's just, you know, Dan Quinn has his issues. I know people out there love Bill Belichick. Extremely hard pass for me personally. But I get it. You know, I'm not taking him over Ben Johnson. I'm not taking Brian Flores over Ben Johnson. That's the second guy, I think. And that's not just me. If you listen to anybody who's covering the coaching cycle right now, it's, yeah, we have Jim Harbaugh, and then we have Ben Johnson right after that. It's not just Tyler and I. It's not just Arjun. It's whoever is covering this coaching cycle. Ben Johnson is objectively the top offensive candidate, and he's the top candidate overall if Jim Harbaugh stays at Michigan.
If there was a candidate that was Dan Quinn but offense, or Brian Flores but offense,
100%
available, he'd probably be over Ben Johnson for me. Like, if there was another, yeah. I was a coach, I coach on offense, I've got a really good one right now, and I'm in line to be a head coach, that would be the person I'd probably have for Ben Johnson. Yeah. Depends on what the offense looks like. But if you've got Cowboys defense version of offense, an offensive head coach or candidate, that'd be my number two. There isn't one that I can think of.
No, if there were like a Doug Peterson guy in this class, then sure. Awesome. Sign me up 100%. Not Frank Reich currently, but like if Frank Reich before the Panthers were in this cycle, I think you could talk yourself into that option as well. I would still probably have Ben Johnson over post-Indy Frank Reich, but there just aren't those guys around. You know, Jay Glazer was talking about Jed Fish and Cliff Kingsbury, who are currently coaching college teams. Obviously, Cliff Kingsbury is not, you know, completely like a college guy right now. He's like an offensive consultant for USC, but that's where teams are at in terms of the hiring cycle of offense. They're going to Cliff Kingsbury. Let me say that again, Cliff Kingsbury and Jed Fish, who is doing a wonderful job at Arizona. But the offensive experienced head coach is not out there this year. It's Jim Harbaugh and nobody else. And Jim Harbaugh hasn't called plays for a decade.
Oh, you're stopping there. Sorry. Yeah. I thought there was more. I would also think, where is Quinn still number three for you, or where's McDonald at for you? Because it's hard to deny what the Ravens do week in, week out on that.
Yeah, man, Mike McDonald.
But sort of did this, but
yeah. We've talked about Mike McDonald. I think what he's done specifically over the last 2 weeks against the 49ers and the Miami Dolphins, who are objectively the top two offenses in the league, is really hard to ignore. Like, I think at worst for me, McDonald has moved into the tier of like Bobby Slowick and Frank Smith and Brian Callahan, like at worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. I still would be concerned about the potential coaching staff that he could put together, and concerned about, again, doing a first-time head coach as the defensive coordinator role. But it's impossible to ignore what he's doing. I mean, they didn't have Kyle Hamilton today. Marlon Humphrey went out in the first quarter, and they just took it to the Miami Dolphins offense. And so it's hard not to be impressed with the way Mike McDonald is coaching that unit and what he's doing and getting out of that unit on a week-to-week basis against the top offenses in the league. I think it was Deontay Lee pointed out that, he took one game plan against the 49ers and he took a different game plan against the Miami Dolphins, and they ran both of them at an elite level without their top safety, one of the best safe players in the league, without their top corner. So it's incredibly impressive, man. And you can talk about, like, you get Joe Hortiz as part of this too. Like, I think that's a good way. So McDonald has definitely moved up, but I still think it's fair to not put him in my second tier.
Yeah, no, I would definitely put him in there. If he were as a candidate for any team, I think he'd be
100%
third overall. Yeah. But for the specifically for the Chargers, we're all looking for for offense here.
Yeah. No, objectively, like, if you are the Commanders or if you are whoever, Mike McDonald is probably in your top three. Like, I think that's a fair thing to say. But for the Chargers, I still think I would lean Quinn because of the experience, because of the potential staff he could put together. So I still think that's a fair thing to say.
Mm-hmm. Is there a coach out there who you feel is should be a – okay, if we just did this and we judge based on coaches who are doing a lot with a terrible roster, or at least on their side of the ball, who is that? Who is that candidate that stands out? Because, I mean, the Ravens are talented, the Cowboys are talented, the Lions are talented.
Sure.
So
Of any coach that I've, like, researched this year, I think the one who is doing the most with the least amount of talent is Drew Petsing in Arizona, the offensive coordinator. He's obviously the guy that Joshua Dobbs, he had a couple games of, what's that kid's from Houston, Clayton Toon, a few games with Kyler Murray. I mean, the Eagles are not the same Eagles as last year, but they took it to the Eagles in Philadelphia and they do some creative stuff. I think Drew Petsing is a year away from being like the next Ben Johnson kind of candidate, because he's a guy who's worked under Kevin Stefanski. He's obviously doing his own thing in Arizona right now. Gary Kubiak is a big mentor of his. So I think Drew Petsing is a guy who's doing the most with least. They're not an elite offense by any means, but he's definitely exceeded expectations there. I mean, they're in every single game. Some of that is obviously what Gannon is doing as well, but you know, I've watched a little bit of the Cardinals on tape, and I've just been super impressed with what they do from a schematic standpoint. What he's doing with Trey McBride as his, like, best player is pretty impressive. So I think Drew Petsing is the guy that I've researched that's doing the most with the worst supporting cast of players around him.
What about Dave Canales, or how do you say his name?
Dave Bucks Canales is, the Bucks coordinator certainly deserves mention there. He's gotten career play out of Geno Smith as the quarterback's coach. And then we've seen what the Seahawks offense looks like this year without Canales working with Baker. But he still has Tristan Wirfs and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and a bunch of other high-end players. So I think Canales is doing great. But like, if you're talking about maximizing a poor roster, I would say Drew Petsing is doing a better job of that, given what he's working with there.
Yeah, totally. Canales is also from Carson, California.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
There's a little stadium that he used to play in.
See, that's the thing, man, is if the Chargers were doing this next year and you had Ben Johnson, Petsing, and Canales all, like, very established, man, that would be a great group to pull from. But right now, it's basically Ben Johnson is the only high-end offensive guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So we talked about that for a little bit here. So we'll take questions for five-ish minutes, maybe a little bit more. We'll do some quick hitters. So if you guys have anything you want to get off your chest, feel free to do so. We always appreciate super chats, and I'm sure we'll take questions for a little bit here.
The strangest end to a year for the Chargers I can recall.
Yeah.
This is, like, specifically a New Year's Day thing. Chiefs still won the West, though. Say a different year, same outcome, even if it was uglier for them.
I think they're going to be potentially one and done in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I'll see who they go up against. And then they'll just take one of the really, really freaking good receivers in this draft and just torch the NFL next year, unfortunately. Yeah.
Or sign T. Higgins or some shit.
Yeah.
NSN, how long do you think it will take for the head coach to be hired, whoever it is? If it's Jim Harbaugh and they lose on Monday, they can hire Harbaugh essentially whenever. The NFL coaches are not available to interview until during the divisional round of the playoffs. That was a change the NFL made this year. So assuming that a usual coaching hire takes about like 10 days, you're talking about probably end of January.
Yeah, unless they are like, here's our two. And yeah. So if we get either in the building, let's go. You know, if they want to interview some other, the other coordinators, like a Dan Quinn, like a McDonald, like they're going to have to, you know, wait a bit longer. And I don't, how often do we get announcements of a head coach hire during the postseason for a coordinator who's on that team? Closer to the Super Bowl, maybe? It never feels like wild card, or, you know.
I mean, the hirings aren't really able to be announced formally until after their season is over. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we knew that the Cardinals were interested in John Gannon, like from the jump. Like that was kind of the guy that people identified for them. Same thing with Shane Steichen and Indy, but you know, Shane Steichen's, he was announced like literally like within 12 hours of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Ooh, we're getting some draft questions. How many are you at, by the way? Because I feel like you all of a sudden just had a great week of just getting through players. And
yeah, I got to some players this week. I think I'm at 11, 12.
Nice. All right.
Yeah. So I watched the three offensive tackles. I watched Olufoshanu, Joe Alt, and J.C. Latham this week. I watched the center from Georgia. I forget his name. Van Pan? I forget. So I watched some more offensive line tape this week. J.C. Latham is basically like what you watch from Darnell Wright. That's who J.C. Latham is.
Okay, like, I like him.
Add 20 pounds on him too. So he's a fun player.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, we'll watch him. Van Pran, watched him. Solid. Didn't like him as much as Powers Johnson. Not bad by any means, but I think there's definitely a difference there. One could maybe even sneak into the first round. One, I think, belongs on day two.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I agree with that. Wanted to get to this comment. Vaughn Maduro, Eric Bieniemy was drafted by the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh played for the Chargers. They should be our first looks, then Ben Johnson. What do you make of Bieniemy's case over the last 3 weeks? Has that changed at all for you since we did our rankings a few weeks ago?
I think he's sort of falls in the upper, not upper tier. He's probably around Slowik for me, especially because you can consider the staff he could bring with him. You know, we're talking about general managers from the Chiefs, and there's a couple options there. So not working with a ton in Washington, but I think if you're looking for an experienced play caller, offensive coordinator, I should say, and someone who has the associate head coach title in Washington, then yeah, I think he should be up there. But the hang up, I think, for you and I both, it's one, the fact that the interviews have never materialized into anything for him at any point. Yeah. And two, I don't know if the Chargers are going to lead off with him or really take the interviews as seriously if they want a completely like clean history, which is very difficult, I get, but like there's enough things where I think the Chargers would just kind of be like, I don't really know about that. And so to me, if we're looking about like could we rank based on the Chargers fits?
Yeah.
And I don't think the Chargers are going to look at some of the things from the past, not that they've been unforgiving things, but I just don't know if that would move him up any bit on the list.
Yeah, I think also you have to take into consideration that he did interview with the Chargers in 2021, and he was not somebody they felt the need to interview twice. So there is a previous track record here. They probably know each other well enough to say that Bieniemy is probably not somebody that they're super interested in, because it's not like a ton has changed from their perspective as an ownership group since 2021, since they interviewed him. Obviously, they won the Super Bowl last year. You know, the Chiefs did, but it's not like it was a super clean offensive performance from wire to wire for the Chiefs last year. Certainly, they miss him in Kansas City. I think that is an objective fact at this point. But I think all of this is kind of baked in. So I think, like, if I were a team that needed, like, a new head coach and Eric Bieniemy were a candidate, I would probably have him higher. But for the Chargers, I just think there's enough there that the Chargers are probably not super interested in Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah, and I don't think it's very difficult to sell. Hello, I am the new head coach. My offense was 22nd in the league in most categories. Right. Like, that's a very, very difficult sell, even though it's not a ton he's working with. Right. It's not like a great situation over there. You do it for another season. You start pushing that into that top 10. Let's say you get a quarterback and that quarterback really develops next year or whatever they do. Then you could have a much more serious conversation, which I know it sounds like a lot for Bieniemy. That's kind of been his thing. Everyone's quote unquote moving the goalposts and trying to make him do like the next thing every single time he does that thing. But
yeah,
like that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Isabel, opinions on Parham being a scratch these past few games? He is currently healthy. Gibsonis was asked about that this week. But they've been rolling with three tight ends instead of four. That's been a change under Giff Smith. So what do you make of Donald Parham being a healthy scratch?
Very puzzling. Initially, I thought, okay, he was hurt, I think he was. But then the healthy scratch stuff has been a surprise. I don't know if, you know, what's his name? Giff Smith mentioned the wrist as something that had happened earlier in the season. And honestly, I thought that was bad when I saw it. So for him to have come back, great. I don't know if there's still something within that wrist, but
sure.
It's puzzling for sure, and I think it would help you to have him out there. So they've got like Duggan active as an emergency quarterback over him. You know, I think it's just kind of all strange. So yeah, very, very strange. He's on the team next year in terms of contract. I doubt they're cutting him because you have nobody else. So I think you have to keep him at least until you find out more from your draft. So yeah, I don't know. It's a very strange situation.
Yeah, it's frustrating because when has been on the field, he's been, you know, had productive moments. I think he's certainly more trustworthy and productive than Stone Smart and what they've gotten out of him. So it's a tad frustrating, but you know, Donald Parham has not played well. It's you know, consistently as a blocker. He's been one of the, you know, just as bad as Trey McKitty was, in my opinion, as a blocker this year. So it's been a frustrating season for him. Injuries, poor play. You know, I don't begrudge them from him being a healthy scratch. See what you have in Stone Smart. I wish they would see what they have in other young guys more often.
Yeah, go get Steven Anderson. Give me a throwback final game. Just yeah. Steven Anderson, you know, Eckler for kicks. Everyone who's, you know, have a blast.
East Coast, 410 East Coast, with the Giants likely picking ahead of the Chargers, do you see them being a landing spot for Neighbors, or do you see them going with a different position? So the Giants are kind of creating some distance between them and the Chargers in terms of SOS, which is really unfortunate that Mason Crosby missed that kick today. You know, so it seems like the Giants are probably picking ahead of the Chargers, you know, barring a real surprise win over the Eagles next week. What do you make of the Giants and their spot? Because I think obviously they have Daniel Jones. They drafted Jalin Hyatt last year. They drafted Evan Neal a couple of years ago. That's kind of been an objective disaster. So what do you make of the Giants being ahead of the Chargers, Tyler?
I feel like depending on how the ownerships and people above him have felt about Brian Daboll's job, like it's time to go get Brian Daboll a quarterback. And now they spent a lot of money on Daniel Jones, hoping that he was the quarterback. He's not. I appreciate what Tyrod Taylor has done. It's fun to watch, but he's not the future. DeVito, that was fun for 2 weeks. That's over. They got to go get a quarterback. I think that, you know, Daniel Jones, it'll be expensive to have him. We'll see. Maybe it's Jaden Daniels, and Daniel Jones has got to play half the season or whatever. You know, I think Daniel Jones can make that work for the amount of money he's being paid. But then the Giants have an out in 2025 in terms of Daniel Jones' contract. So I think you go get a quarterback next year and you start building towards, you know, the future and kind of moving on from Daniel Jones, which has not really worked out.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I feel like Brian Daboll would have a hard time rolling with the same status quo as this upcoming season, current season. You get Jaden Daniels, and I think maybe you feel a little bit different about your future there. FPS wanted to know, and this is a common question as well, what do you guys feel about Daniel Jeremiah getting brought in as an assistant GM or full-time GM?
sort of what we talked about with Tej, which is being great at the draft is great, but there's an amount of randomness that is associated with that. Yeah. And even the teams that are great drafting teams are not perfect. Maybe they're 50-50, 40% of their hits. You got to have a lot of time and experience working with the other parts of football that are beyond the draft, operations, free agency, contracts, yep. all that sort of stuff, working with different staff. Like, you got to be able to do those things too. Daniel Jeremiah, I'm sure he could draft really well, let's say, but everything else that's lacking in terms of what he's done previously, you know, whether it's him or Lewis Riddick or whatever, like, you got to go find someone who's actually been in there, done that, done all the things, understands everything. It's just a bit different.
Yeah, I feel like it's very different. I don't think anybody doubts that Dan Jeremiah or Lewis Riddick have like an eye for talent. I think that's objectively true. But so much of being a GM in the NFL is the relationship you have with agents and the relationships that you have with your scouts and everybody like that. It's such an important aspect of the role that people kind of undersell is your connections, your relationships, how you're able to hire a staff and put people around you. And I think being a smart talent evaluator does not automatically, you know, equate to being a high-end GM. I mean, some of the best GMs in today's league right now are not even guys who have a background in scouting. You know, a lot of it is the management side, the business side, the analytical side, and then they hire smart people to do the draft. And I think that's kind of what Tyler is talking about, is that the GM is the draft is one part. It's a very important part, but it's not the only part of things. And so Daniel Jeremiah, I think, could be a very good draft evaluator. He's done that in the past, but also he's talked about this publicly. He's not really in the place of his life where he is interested in working in the front office. He has teenagers. He has young children in elementary school. He wants to be a part of their lives. Like, he does not want to take a job like being a GM, because it's 24/7, 365. And he's not super interested in that right now. He's got a great gig with NFL Network. And I think he's very happy doing that. He's very happy doing the Chargers games. I just don't think he's super interested in making that jump right now. Lewis Riddick probably seems more interested in doing that, but you know, that's probably a different question, because Lewis's resume is a bit different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Worst time for a cough right there. It is
all good.
All right. That's going to do it for us. Happy 2023, everybody. At this time next week when we'll be recording, it'll be 2024. So hopefully you have a great time celebrating tonight. Stay safe. Designate drive if you can. You know, if not, don't go anywhere. So hopefully you have a great time celebrating though. Tyler, any final thoughts before we head out?
See you next year.
Good job. That was nice. Good delivery there.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So that'll do it for us today. We'll have our usual show on the Chargers channel on Wednesday. And then we'll do our final regular season week next week, which is crazy. So hopefully you have a great time. Tomorrow's New Year's Day. I think we want Michigan to win. If you want Harbaugh to be the Chargers head coach, so go blue, I guess.
I can't even say that. Nope. Nope.
All right, man. Sounds good. So appreciate you guys. Happy New Year. All that good stuff. We'll see you next time. As always, bolt up.